In January 2018, which, if you think about it, is not that far away, the cannabis will become legal, sort of, in the state of California. This momentous change in the body politic leads us to ask, what will be the consequences from California's green gold rush?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,130th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Singapore who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at MetroFarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby on the boards. Jason, do we have the pre-flight check complete?
Oh, system's ready for takeoff.
Then let's take off. Folks, in a few short weeks, cannabis will become legal, sort of, in California. Legalization is expected to generate so much cash, State Treasurer John Chiang is asking for a fleet of armored cars to pick it up and take it to Sacramento. And so today we pause to ask, what will be the consequences of California's green gold rush? You know, illicit cannabis has been supporting generations of Californians living in the tall trees and shrubs of places like the Emerald Triangle of Mendocino, Humboldt, and Trinity counties. Will the communities that survived on the illicit cannabis economy thrive on the illegal, on the legal cannabis economy? Well, what will happen to law enforcement community? You know, for decades, the principal function of law enforcement has been to maintain the high price of cannabis by periodically prosecuting select illicit farms. And those high prices, of course, gave illicit farmers plenty of incentive to grow. How will law enforcement maintain the high price of cannabis so as to provide farmers with sufficient incentive to farm? And what will happen to all California's various governments? The state government has assigned responsibility for managing the legal cannabis industry to municipal and county governments. Will all of California's governments compete with each other for the green gold and legal cannabis? And if so, will that not make California's governments pushers of cannabis consumption? In part four of our California Green Gold Rush series, we speculate as to what the consequences will be when cannabis becomes legal, sort of, in California. And who better to speculate with than Fred Chrisman, who is an anthropologist at Humboldt State University and a research associate of the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research. Fred, welcome to the Food Chain.
Pleasure to be with you, Michael.
Good to have you aboard. So, how's the harvest?
Well, we had an Indian summer, as you probably know, over in Santa Cruz as well, which was perfect up here in the Emerald Triangle for allowing the buds to ripen to their fullest, to get their most resinous. And most of the farmers I know say that this was not only a bumper crop, but a top drawer superior crop this year.
A vintage harvest in the Emerald Triangle and throughout California thanks to Indian summer. Now, don't always get those, do you, up there?
No, the last few years have been pretty bad. We've had unseasonable rains despite the drought that have forced harvest to terminate early. We've had rains in mid to late August or early September. This time we had a few very light rains, which were succeeded by warm weather so that it dried, you know, it eliminated, well, it reduced the mold and mildew problems that come with having rains close to the harvest period. They got the beds got dried out, the plants continued to grow, and the beds to bloom, so it was particularly good.
So a lot of happy people up there in the Emerald Triangle then. Got a good harvest in.
Happy with the climate, with the weather climate, but not at all happy with the political climate. We've had a series of disasters befall us. Just in the last week or two, I guess 10 days since the temporary four-month regs were announced.
Aha. Well, and that's where we want to go today. What are the consequences we're facing as we go into legalization? You're an anthropologist, Fred, you're with the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research. That's a mouthful.
Yes, we call it HIMR.
So, interdisciplinary, you being the anthropologist, you work with an economist and a sociologist and others to look at cannabis from a whole system, right? As many different angles as you can.
We just had a talk on Thursday night by a medical doctor and vice provost at UC Davis up here about health and safety issues related to working in the cannabis industry. So we span not only the social sciences, but the physical sciences as well.
Good. Okay, and so being an astute observer, take us to the Emerald Triangle for those of us who live across the fruited plains of the United States of America. When somebody says the Emerald Triangle, what do we think about? What is the place?
Well, it's actually rather diverse for a specific region. I lived with family farmers. As an anthropologist, we go out and we live in the field with the people that we're studying. And the last harvest season, I lived in Mendocino County with family farmers throughout the whole season, from planting through post-harvest work. Then this past season, I lived in southern Humboldt with a farm family and studied a variety of neighboring farms as well. And next year I will live with farm families in Trinity County. What I found so far is that there are huge differences between Mendocino, we call it Mendo, and Humboldt in terms of strategies, sizes, strains. To put it most succinctly, one of my farm family members told me, if you want a couple of good pounds or great pounds of weed, go to Mendo. But if you want hundreds of pounds of great weed, come to Humboldt. So the scale is quite different between the two. I'm anticipating in Trinity adding a further complexity in that many of the farmers in Trinity are not the typical kind of back to the land and subsequent generation hippie, more or less white farmers, but rather a large number of Hmong farmers who have migrated out of places like Fresno to join the Green Rush to be able to grow medicinally and recreationally marijuana in Trinity. So we'll see an ethnic component emerge when I go to Trinity next year.
You're kind of like the anthropologist Margaret Mead living among the natives of New Guinea or something.
That's right. We go and we spend extended periods of time. It's typical for anthropologists to spend 3 to 3 months to 9 months actually in the field, living with the people that they're studying, participating in their various activities. So I learned how to make clones, how to transplant seedlings into the fields and greenhouses, how to clean the plants during the year to keep mold and mildew at bay, and finally to harvest buck, trim, cure, and even I went with a farm family on a run from Humboldt County just, about a month ago, down to Los Angeles with 100 pounds of weed in large coolers called Yeti coolers to deliver to various legal and not-so-legal clients.
Wow. Have you ever been busted?
It's amazing in that, if you're white and older and privileged, you're usually not, you're not profiled as the individuals that they're looking for. And furthermore, the growers that I've been studying are at the forefront of going through the permitting and legalization processes. So I'm not really living out in the hills with the huge outlaw and, you know, kinds of grows that are more likely to be targeted.
So you made it by. Well, folks, we're going to take a quick break, but wow, we're talking about the pending legalization of cannabis traveling all the way up to Emerald Triangle up there in Northern California, asking what will the consequences be of legalization with Fred Crisman, who is an anthropologist at Humboldt State, working with the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research, and I think having a lot of fun doing it. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, right back, 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned.
You can dream it, build it, own it, Metro Farm it. You can sow it, feed it, grow it, Metro Farm it. You can harvest it and dry it. You can sell it, Metro Farm it.
Learn how to dream it, build it, sow it, seed it, grow it, harvest it, sell it, Metro Farm it. Yes, you can do it. Dream it, build it, earn it, own it, Metro Farm it.
Oh, learn it, do it, earn it, Metro Farm it. Dream it, build it, own it. It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it.
It's all in Metro Farm, the guide to growing for the city. Get your copy today at metrofarm.com.
It's easy, you can do it, Metro Farm it. And now, back to What's Eating What on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, what's eating us today is what will be the consequences of legalization of cannabis in California and perhaps throughout the United States. Traveling up to the Emerald Triangle up there in Northern California with Fred Crisman, who's an anthropologist studying the culture of the cannabis industry, the illicit cannabis industry. Fred, why was the Emerald Triangle, why did the Emerald Triangle of Mendocino and Humboldt and Trinity counties become so famous for cannabis? Why not grow it in Fresno?
I think there's various factors, factors of environment, factors of history, factors of culture that all kind of colluded, so to speak, to lead to this being probably the most productive region for cannabis growing, certainly in the United States and possibly in the world. What's usually focused on the most is the consequences of the Summer of Love down in the Bay Area, when things kind of started to fall apart for the urban-based hippies. And one of the likely responses, other than getting out of the counterculture, was to, quote, go back to the land, unquote. And this occurred all over the country. A lot of back-to-the-landers on the East Coast went to places like Vermont and wound up being a base of support to our Democratic Socialist senator there, Bernie Sanders. But here, a lot of people came out of the Bay Area and found in the Emerald Triangle counties that traditional industries, mainly timber, but also fishing, were declining, and the timber industry had wrought destruction over the landscape through clear cutting, leading to land that was seen as having virtually no value. And as a result, people that were strapped for cash could, for very affordable prices, buy large acreages of land and settle, often in communal environments, and they tried to live on the land growing food, and had difficulty with that. They brought their love of cannabis with them and started dropping a few seeds in the soil so that they would have some personal stash. And then they found that it grew well here, and that their friends back down in the urban areas, like the Bay, were interested in purchasing it from them, especially as a result of the U.S. global war on drugs, leading to the destruction and spraying of toxic chemicals, paraquat specifically, a variant of Agent Orange, on the cannabis farms in Mexico, which had been the principal supplier.
Well, way back in 1981, I helped produce and film a documentary for NBC Magazine with David Brinkley called Homegrown. In that, we talked our way into 26 cannabis gardens from Seattle to Santa Barbara, and kind of got to know the turf pretty well because of that throughout the season. One day we rented a airplane, a Cherokee 6, and we flew out of Ukiah up through the Emerald Triangle to see what it looked like from the air. And what it looked like from the air was that every square inch of Northern California had been plumbed and turned into a farm. I recall even seeing circus tents with people living in them. It was quite extraordinary. That was three decades ago. What's it like now?
I'm imagining that it's similar, but that now what you're seeing is more organized development of infrastructure, particularly greenhouses of very large sizes, side by side with outdoor grows, and so it looks like very labor-intensive agriculture from the sky.
Mm-hmm. Kind of looked that way before as well, three decades ago. It takes people to do this the way they're doing it. Back then, prices were getting upwards of $4,000 a pound for the best grades of cannabis. What are the prices running now?
Yeah, one of the really big problems that really hit, I mean, there was a slow decline in the price of cannabis going back to the early 2000s, but in the run-up to the, I believe it was the 2010 vote for legalization of rec, the supply exceeded the demand and prices started to go down to $200 or even $1,500 a pound.
Wow.
I just went to the Humboldt County Cup, which is kind of the local variant of the Emerald Cup, which we will have down in Santa Rosa this coming weekend. And at the Humboldt Cup in the 215 area, farmers were selling grams for $5 each. And grams at cups just a year ago were $15. It's hard to know for sure exactly what the price will shake out to be, but with the farm family delivering the 100 pounds down to L.A., the average price he was getting from various buyers was just above $1,000 a pound, and he was delivering it.
Wow, so the price has gone down significantly with the increased production.
Well, with the increased production and with a lot of other pressures coming from, I would say, distributors somewhat, and especially retailers. Retailers have been really pushing hard. Now, the prices are lowest for outdoor because indoor, for both good and bad reasons, gets a premium price. But even indoor at the Humboldt Cup was going for $8 to $10 a gram, whereas it used to be more like $20 to $30.
So up in the Golden Triangle, have the industries of logging and fishing and tourism recovered from their huge slump back in the 80s and 90s?
Absolutely not. Mendocino's a little different than Humboldt, because Humboldt is what we call behind the redwood curtain. In order to come to Humboldt, you really have to drive, you know? You have to drive a long way, or you have to take a very expensive and very irregular air service to the Arcata Airport. So tourism in Mendo, I think, is better than in Humboldt. Timber is, I mean, it still exists, but the vast majority of the mills have closed. The vast majority of the timber that was of high value has long since been clear cut. And so there are very few jobs in timber. In the meantime, fishing, of course, has been devastated by the kind of lifestyles we lead that have basically led to wholesale pollution in the ocean. So fishing, I mean, all you have to do is go to the store and see the price for fish and the difficulty in finding things like wild salmon as opposed to the inferior farmed salmon, to see that the fishing industry has its back up against the wall.
Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to ask you the big question with respect to the Emerald Triangle and the communities and the people that were supported by the traditional illicit cannabis industry. What on earth is going to happen when that industry moves to California's Great Central Valley or Kansas or someplace with 1,000 million acres to grow cannabis and it's all legal? What is going to happen to those communities, to those small farmers up there in the Emerald Triangle, when it's olly-olly oxen-free for the cannabis industry? Will those economies, will that culture, what will those people do? We'll ask Fred Christman when we come back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson, 831-479-1080.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, big changes coming to the state of California. Huge changes in the body politic when cannabis becomes legal and all of those who are out there hiding in the woods can apply for licenses and get a license to grow legal cannabis. And where will that cannabis be grown? Will it be grown in the Emerald Triangle, the traditional areas where cannabis was grown? Or will it be moved to places where it's easier to grow, like the California's Great Central Valley? A lot of big questions there. And let's ask Fred Christman what he thinks, what he sees happening to the culture, the economies, the people of the Emerald Triangle. What do you think, Fred?
Well, I think it's, again, very complicated, and I think there's a short versus a medium versus a long-term effect of legalization. In the short term, we continue to have abundant black market opportunities, not only to other states where it's still illegal or where, for example, in Nevada or Oregon there might be short supplies, but even to Mexico, which is becoming a large export market, reversing the historical process where...
Wait a minute, Fred. You're telling me that Mexico, that used to sell the United States these great big bricks of marijuana filled with seeds, is now buying cannabis from us?
Yeah, and a rather large scale. One of the deliveries that my farm family made in SoCal was to an area right along the border where a gentleman client is exporting the crop to Mexico, where Mexicans have developed a taste for Humboldt's finest. And part of that is because many of the trimmers that come up and work here are themselves from Mexico, but not like the Mexican farm workers that we see in the Central Valley, but rather what we would consider Mexican hipsters, young adults who come from the middle and upper classes and come up here not only to make some good money trimming weed, but also as part of a cultural fulfillment of being involved in kind of the best place where the best cannabis is grown.
Wow.
And they have brought those tastes back to Mexico, and now that is a growing market.
Tell us a little bit about the farm. You've written extensively about farm labor, both in legal and illegal industries. Tell us, compare farm working for, you know, the conventional agriculture and farm working for cannabis, illegal cannabis.
Yeah, I studied legal agricultural crops in the western United States for a quarter century, and I focused in my PhD on oranges and table grapes in the Central Valley. And then for a postdoc, I studied the apple industry in Washington. So now I am literally comparing cannabis with apples and oranges. And what I find, up until now at least, is that workers in the illegal, soon not to be, industry of cannabis earn 2 to 3 times the average wage of what a farm worker harvesting broccoli or lettuce makes in the state of California. And they often enjoy much better conditions of work and living as well. Kind of the opposite about what the media blasts about how victimized cannabis workers are in California. What I find in at least the farms that I've lived at and studied is that they get return visits from young people year after year who just love to come up here, kind of like the way the dude ranches would attract vacationers to cattle and horse ranches as kind of a life experience above and beyond just making ends meet to support impoverished families back home.
Wow. So what will happen to the money? And if the money goes, what will happen to the communities?
Well, as I say, the black market in the near and maybe even medium term will continue to exist. What the state will do to try to appease the federal government to curb black market activity is open to question. It may well be that there may be increased police actions to try to get a handle over the black market. Now, why do I focus on the black market instead of the legal market? Well, it's estimated that in Humboldt County alone, there's at least 10,000 farmers growing cannabis. Only 1,800 of them have taken any steps to get their farms permitted. So, you know, that's a small portion, less than a quarter of all the farms, and I don't think the other folks are going to give up and walk away that easily. And last night I went to True Humboldt's Farmers Quarterly meeting where the county planning commission head admitted that so far of the 1,800 that have applied for permits, less than 100 have received permits as of yet. And so, you know, 100 farms with permits out of 10,000 is bleak and problematic. And as a result, the state has suspended for the first 4 months of the new year the regulations requiring retailers to purchase from legal permitted farms. So we're going to continue having a quasi gray or not legal market for retail, medical, and recreational retailers for at least the first 4 months of this coming year.
So until the foreseeable future expires, it's reefer madness as usual?
Well, I use reefer madness in the context of prohibitionist tales of woe. What I would prefer to call it, although I think it also has some baggage to it, is that the green rush will continue. Furthermore, if you look at the cases of Washington, Oregon, and Colorado, and even Nevada, there are problems with getting the supply to the retailers in the first days, first weeks, and first months of legalization.
But fortunately, we had a major harvest in the Golden Triangle, perfect weather, bumper crop, top quality, waiting for the legalization a couple weeks from now. I got to ask you, though, as we progress, do you see an internecine warfare developing between legal farmers and illegal farmers, wherein they start actually going after each other? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Fred Christman, anthropologist up there in the Emerald Triangle. We're talking about what will happen when cannabis becomes legal in a few weeks. Going to go to the phones when we come back. 831-479-1080.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, as I understand it, California is now producing about 12 times more cannabis than it consumes. Much of the excess, of course, going out of the state, which makes it illegal by federal statute. It's still against the law with the federal government. And, of course, to export it to Mexico, that's really being bad. So there's a dichotomy here. If you're a legal grower, then you're not supposed to export it. But if you're an illegal grower, you're not supposed to export it. But who cares? You're illegal anyway. How am I doing with that, Fred?
Yeah, that sounds about right. And in the past, a lot of enforcement was complaint-driven. So if you were mad at your neighbor because you felt like they were taking water out of the stream, out of season, et cetera, you might report them, although there are a lot of counterculture pressures to not resort to police response. But now Humboldt County claims that they are going to be identifying through GIS means from the air, basically, those farms that can, as you were saying, obviously be seen from the air, and start giving compliance fines of up to $10,000 a day after a 10-day warning that you either have to take down your greenhouses and pull out your plants, or in the course of one season you could find yourself with a $100,000 plus fine, which would lead basically to bankruptcy and having your land taken away from you. So they say they're ready to go in that direction, which means that growers that are legal don't really need to do much if the county really has the means to go after it through this fine process.
Will then the police or the law enforcement authorities then become responsible, as they always have been, for maintaining the price of cannabis for the legal growers by getting rid of all the illegal growers?
Well, to some extent, but of course the other forces will be the distributors and especially the retailers. The retailers have not reduced the price of cannabis. They're still basically selling cannabis at retail at the $5,000 more or less dollar a pound process, even though they're getting it for $1,500 or less a pound. So unless market forces and competition at the retail level lead retailers to lower their prices for their grams, for their ounces, there won't be that process as you describe it.
Wow. Well, let's go to the phones. Folks, the phone number's today, 831-479-1080. We have Rory on our lines. Rory, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. And is it Professor Crispin, and you're at Humboldt State? Is that correct?
Yes, Fred Crisman.
Crisman, okay.
K-R-I-S-S-M-A-N.
Yeah. Got it. You mentioned earlier that the timber industry went into decline and the fisheries went into decline, but you failed to mention that the reason timber went into decline was strictly based on regulation because of the whole spotted owl controversy, which turned out to be false. The whole claim that they needed the old growth only to nest and so on and so forth, without revisiting all that. But you failed to mention that, and then you said the fisheries stopped or went into decline because of pollution. Yet the fisheries are quite alive. You can come down to Monterey or Moss Landing to show you. So you sound like a stoner. And when you don't bring relevant information, hang on. I was a stoner. I know a stoner when I hear one. When you don't bring up relevant information, all your comments are suspect. You're just glossing over.
Well, be specific, Rory.
Wait a minute. You gloss over details. You're not objective towards cannabis. Okay, and I used to smoke, and we used to obtain great buds out of Humboldt in the mid '70s. So I know what I'm talking about. Okay, and you just, everything you say is suspect in my mind because you're not objective, because you're swimming in cannabis. Your body is full of THC. How can you think straight?
Well, okay.
And it frustrates me as a taxpayer. I got to pay your salary.
Let's have Fred answer the question. Thank you for the comment. Well, holy smokes! What do you think, Fred? Are you swimming in cannabis?
Yeah,
has it affected you?
What would frustrate Rory more is that I was one of 12 professors in the whole state who was paid by the state of California last year to write reports on the proposed regulation effects on farmers and communities throughout California. What Rory doesn't seem to understand is that the clear-cutting of the timber by the timber industry led to the sedimentation in the creeks and the rivers that led to a plummeting of the salmon stocks. Now, I don't know that in Monterey salmon is one of the main fishing industries, but up here it was salmon and crabbing, and both have been dramatically depleted. In fact, crabbing last year, I believe it was, or the year before, had to be delayed 3 months because of problems related to the changing environmental coastal zones.
Well, the Central California has had the same problem. But, you know, when we come back, we're going to have a few minutes left, and I want to ask you the real big question, and that is government. Will not government become addicted to the green gold money? And if so, won't government become the pusher man of cannabis consumption? Wow. This is the Food Chain, right back.
Here's a little secret I'm telling you. Take a little pledge called the 2x2. Spend $2 on local food each day and get two friends to do the same and play. Oh, they'll spend their money, and when they're through, they'll get two friends and do it too.
We can eat our way to economic security and personal freedom. It won't cost an extra dime, and it will be so easy, it will make you blush. All it takes is two numbers. One is two, the other is 2-2. Join us. Take the 2x2 pledge.
There's a little secret I shared with you, a simple pledge called the 2x2. You can do it. It don't cost much. It's so easy, it'll make you blush. Pledge two local bucks each day. Get two others to pledge and play.
Take your 2x2 pledge at MetroFarm.com.
2x2. So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson, with a few minutes left with Fred Crisman. One of the big questions that puzzles me greatly is, what is going to happen to our governments? The state government has given county and municipal governments governing authority over managing the legal cannabis industry to one extent or another. And so different counties, different communities are taking different steps to manage this business. Monterey County was one of the first to jump into the legal farming business by opening up its greenhouse infrastructure to growing pot, now charging $15 a square foot for the right to grow pot. Now, I'm just wondering, what about other counties seeing all of this money and going, well, maybe I'll charge just $10? Fred, what's going to happen with our governments?
Yeah, I think this is right, and this may bode well, however you may look at it, for legalization nationwide. I just read an article this morning by CNBC that, you know, in the past, we've always thought of legalization of cannabis following the alcohol model after the end of prohibition in the 30s. But what they were arguing is a result of the tax reform package, reform in quotes, of course, the tax cuts passed by the Senate, by the Congress, although it has to be reconciled, that each state will be under increased pressure to find new revenues along the casino model or the gambling model. And so as people see the people leaving their state to gamble in other states, they say, oh, well, we have to capture that, so we have to put aside our objections to gambling and bring casino money to our state. And so the argument of the article is we might find in the medium term that state legislatures are going to be moved to legalize, not by voter referendum as up until now generally, but by the state legislator. They're going to have to legalize cannabis so that they can get a hold of some of that tax money that you've been talking about.
And of course, so many of those governments, both local and county and state and federal governments, are all essentially bankrupt and have so many unfunded liabilities that they're essentially desperate for more money. So they're going to be looking at this and going, well, we may as well open up a Indian cannabis farm like they have Indian casinos or whatnot. I don't see any end to the need of government for more money.
I think that's right, and you know, we're just going to have to follow that and see whether cannabis follows the gambling model instead of the alcohol model. Obviously, in my opinion, when you're just trying to chase tax dollars, you're not really considering all the public policy consequences to health and safety, for example. And so despite my reputed THC-addled brain, I'm very concerned that we are plunging into public policies based on profit rather than concern for the public. And the latest example we saw is that in the morning before the regs were announced, the interim regs, midday, all of the experts were saying there was going to be a 1-acre cap on cannabis grows in order to protect small family farms like those up here in the Emerald Triangle. Yet at midday when they released the regs, what they found is that there's a 4-acre cap that's going to be promoted.
And that's just the start of it. We're out of time. Fred Christman, anthropologist, the Humboldt Institute for Interdisciplinary Marijuana Research. Thank you for joining us, Fred. Appreciate it.
Thank you
all.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.